But if you have a form-fitting N95 mask on your face, it is going to block you from inhaling that virus. And if you're infected and you're wearing an N95 mask, it's going to block you from exhaling that virus, infecting other people. So it offers really our fashion statements.
Given that an N95 or a rough equivalent is so much better than a cloth mask, and given that they're a little bit more expensive than, say, a cloth mask might be, should the administration be shipping out millions of free masks the way it has promised to do with tests?
They absolutely should. The U.S. government and the taxpayer has paid for the scale-up and production of these masks, so Americans shouldn't have to pay an exorbitant price twice to be able to have those tools they need to stop the pandemic.
I think there were a lot of people who were very, very hopeful that this pandemic would be ending this past summer. And then there were people who were very hopeful that it might be ending with the Delta wave. Now we have Omicron among us. Do we have to adjust our thinking here and just accept that the pandemic is going to be with us for a very long time? And the question is how we live normal lives with it?
There was no one more hopeful of this pandemic ending last summer than me, probably. There's so many of us who are just exhausted, especially our healthcare workers and frontline workers. However, this virus is going to continue to change. And the reason we're seeing these variants is because we haven't vaccinated enough of the world where these variants are likely to emerge. And so if we really want to stop the virus from changing, we need to take an all-of-us approach and vaccinate the world and build a wall of immunity.
5 days from 10.
See, it's clear the CDC is listening and they understand the challenges. However, they didn't go all the way to also balance the need for public health and to protect people and workers. If they had just said we can shorten the time for isolation and to make sure that you have two consecutive negative rapid antigen test, then they would do a lot more to assure that the workers going back into the workforce are not shedding virus, not infecting others. Because if we are sending people back into the workforce too soon, we could infect many more of our colleagues and have many more people out of work than originally before they changed the guidelines.
I want people to know that you quit the Trump administration over its COVID response in 2020. You have since advised President Biden during his transition to office. Now you've watched what the new administration...
I think the Biden administration started out very strongly and did all the right things to get vaccination rates up and do all the right messaging to make sure people were aware of this threat. Where I saw the liberal population in the United States, I think if they could change their messaging on the right type of high-quality mask to wear, the N95s. I think if they can ramp up and get tests into the hands of every American.
Rick Bright, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Exactly how diverse is the United States? NPR has been taking a closer look at the leaders of the Census Bureau who are supposed to answer that question. And we found that the federal agency is led mostly by white people. That raises concerns about the data the country relies on, as NPR's Hansi Lo Wong reports.
It's been more than a decade since Monica Garcia Perez first walked through the glass doors of the Census Bureau's headquarters. She was a researcher there for 3 years.
Do you remember the years?
2006 to 2009. Yes, I know. I would never forget those years.
She was working on her PhD in economics when she helped develop data analysis projects at the Bureau. And during her time there, Garcia Perez was on the permanent full-time staff under the Bureau's director. And we found the Bureau has not met its goal of achieving, quote, a workforce that reflects the rich diversity of the American public that we serve, unquote. Its senior executives, mostly identified as white, not Latino, and male.
I think what it has been
identified as either American Indian, Alaska Native, Asian, Black, Latino, Pacific Islander, or multiracial. Some census watchers say they're concerned this lack of diversity has persisted for years at the same agency that has undercounted people of color decade after decade.
We need people to understand firsthand, ideally, the obstacles, the barriers, and the systematic exclusion that so many populations have faced in this country.
Desi Small Rodriguez is an assistant professor of sociology at UCLA who is Chicana and a citizen of the Northern Cheyenne Nation and has served as an outside advisor to the Bureau.
And it's really difficult to do that if you're a white man because you've never experienced that in your life in this country.
Undercounts in the census have produced inaccurate data that's used to distribute political representation and federal money to states and local communities. With so much at stake, It's becoming more and more important to track the cultural competencies of the Bureau's leaders, says Arturo Vargas, CEO of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials Educational Fund.
I had to advocate for the Census Bureau to look at the full diversity of the Latino population.
When the Bureau was researching how to encourage Latinos to participate in the 2020 census, there were initially no plans to hold specific focus groups with Latinos who primarily speak English.
They could not comprehend the reality that a large segment of the Latino population does not consume its information exclusively in Spanish.
The Census Bureau declined to make a representative available for an interview for this story, but said in a statement that it's, quote, committed to attracting, developing, and retaining a diverse and inclusive workforce. Still, there is a long-standing reason why the Bureau has not made major progress on its diversity goals. According to Arnold Jackson, the Bureau's former associate director of the 2010 Census, who first joined the Bureau in the 1980s.
I was told by the highest level people in the organization who had recruited and hired me that the culture of the organization was best viewed as a tribal culture.
With a lot of people sharing similar backgrounds, and Jackson, who is African American, says they often end up replicating themselves, which in turn limits promotions for staffers of color.
I've seen kids go 2 or 3 years into their professional careers and just not know what's going on, but that something is amiss.
To keep up with the country's demographics, though, the Bureau will need more economists, statisticians, and other technical experts of color who want to work in public service. And that requires...
We'll learn and we'll be able to grow.
She says the problem is that's still harder for some groups to do than others. Hansi Lo Wong, NPR News.
Should spend more time with that group of people rather than the people in the corporations.
I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll get into the details next time on Marketplace.
Hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Supporters of WPR include Madison Country Day School and Wild Birds Unlimited. You too can ensure the future of WPR programs by being a business sponsor. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Funeral Home.
Advisory goes into effect tonight for the northwest corner of the state with wind chills of 35 to 45 below zero possible. Today, cloudy for central and northeast Wisconsin. Rain and freezing rain is possible in the south. A good chance of snow in the north with a few inches of accumulation possible. Highs ranging from the single digits in the north to the mid-30s in the south. On Saturday, New Year's Day, a winter storm watch goes into effect for Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha. 4 to 8 inches of snow possible with that storm. It's 8:21.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Sattva, offering 7 different types of handcrafted mattresses, including delivery, setup, and old mattress removal. More at SAATVA.com. From Charles Schwab, with a variety of financial planning options, from online tools to meeting with a financial consultant, Schwab works to make it easy to plan for tomorrow, today. More at Schwab.com/plan. And from Total Wine & More, whose top 20 wines of the year list can help find a gift or a holiday menu item. Total Wine & More, in-store, online, or on the app. Spirits not available in Virginia or North Carolina.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Sarah McCammon. 2 years ago, we met Victoria Gray. She's a pioneer in the new age of genetic medicine. Gray became the first person with sickle cell disease to be treated with the revolutionary gene editing technique called CRISPR. NPR health correspondent Rob Stein has had exclusive access to follow Gray's story, and he brings us this update.
Last time I spoke with Victoria Gray, the news couldn't be better. Gone were the sudden attacks of horrible pain. Gone was the devastating fatigue that had left her helpless to care for herself or her kids. Gone were the nightmarish nights in the emergency room, getting blood transfusions and powerful pain meds. but it had been more than a year since we last spoke, so I was holding my breath when I called her just before Christmas that she was still okay. After all, one big question was, would getting her blood cells genetically modified keep working? So, how are you?
I'm doing great.
You are?
Yes, I am.
Oh, that's great. So, well, what's going on?
Well, it's close to the holidays, so right now just been Christmas shopping for the kids and family.
And her health? Any signs of sickle cell, the genetic blood disorder that had plagued her all her life?
Oh, my health been doing great. You know, I haven't had any problems with sickle cell at all. I did get a cold about a week ago, but other than that, everything is fine.
Victoria is still so traumatized by a life of sickle cell that just getting a cold still terrifies her. A simple cold had been one of many things that could trigger a pain attack.
Like having PTSD, you know, I was scared, like, okay, is this going to...
She volunteered for. Doctors took cells out of her bone marrow, edited a gene in their lab, and infused the modified cells back into her body to give her healthy red blood cells. And it's not just Victoria, who's now 36 and lives in Forest, Mississippi. Doctors have now treated at least 45 patients with sickle cell and a related condition known as beta thalassemia.
Immediately after patients leave the hospital where they are feeling better and able to resume their life normally without the horrible complications that can happen from sickle cell disease.
It's gone so well, the companies developing the treatment hope to seek Food and Drug Administration approval sometime in the next 18 to 24 months.
This is very exciting for all of us.
Like millions of other families, it still hasn't been an easy year for Victoria. She lost an aunt and a cousin to COVID-19, and she's still hunkering down with her family to protect themselves. But she's been doing so well, she's been doing things she never thought possible, like work full-time as a cashier at a Walmart, start thinking about going back to school, play with the family's new puppy, Rocky.
It's been great. I'm finally at a point now to where I feel normal, just doing mom things, housewife things, and great for me, and I'm happy about it.
Doctors will continue to follow Victoria and other volunteers in the research for 15 years.
Closed. She checked her phone.
Drop-in had exceeded capacity for the day, and there were no longer any drop-in tests available.
The following day, she found another site had closed early. The next day, when she found an open site, there was a long line, and it was raining.
I was without an umbrella or a rain jacket for my kids, and I was unwilling to wait in a God knows how long line in the freezing rain.
Parents and teachers have been increasingly frustrated about what they say is an inadequate plan to test school children before the start of the new term. During the break, the earliest, after classes are set to begin.
So right now we're mobilizing quickly to coordinate how we're going to distribute those kits with the limited staffing resources that we have.
The only district-specific testing offered before classes start is this Sunday, but across the bay in neighboring Oakland, the school district sent students home with test kits to use over the break. That's something that San Francisco could have done too, says Cassandra Curiel, president of the United Educators of San Francisco, a union that represents school workers.
Oakland had a plan. They already had the test kits, and they implemented their plan.
Curiel is worried that without adequate testing, this coming Monday could become a mass exposure event in San Francisco schools. But the test kits in Oakland are not among those promised by Governor Newsom. Michelle Smith McDonald with Alameda's Office of Education says those tests are part of an earlier effort by the state to expand testing. Dahlstrom Ekman in San Francisco.
This is NPR News.
This year, 19 states passed new laws restricting voting access.
We have seen a multi-pronged attack on the foundations of our electoral system and democracy, much more aggressive than anything we've seen in literally decades and decades.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. We look back on a pivotal year in voting rights and look ahead to upcoming elections this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.
It's Morning Edition on WPR. In news, Wisconsin's county jails would be banned from overcharging inmates for phone calls under a measure introduced at the state capitol. Stay with us for details and more Wisconsin news after an update from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Fast-moving wildfires in Colorado have burned close to 600 homes in communities between Denver and Boulder. Thousands of residents were forced to evacuate in places such as Louisville and Superior as strong winds spread the flames quickly. Colorado's governor has declared a state of emergency. Snow is expected to help firefighters today through tomorrow. The National Weather Service says the Pacific Northwest can expect one more day of below-freezing temperatures before afternoon highs warm up a bit on New Year's Day. At least four people have died of exposure amid the cold in cities such as Seattle and Portland.
Thursday, overnight shelters were at about 75% capacity in Seattle and about 90% elsewhere in King County. In the Portland metro area, an average of about 72% available beds are being used. Officials say those who died from exposure in Washington and Oregon are not believed to have been homeless. For NPR News, I'm Diana Opong in Seattle.
This is NPR News from Washington.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 8:31. I'm Melissa Ingalls. County jails would be banned from charging inmates excessive phone rates under a measure introduced at the Wisconsin Capitol. Sean Johnson reports.
A study by the Prison Policy Initiative found some Wisconsin county jails charge more than $14 for a 15-minute phone conversation. Democratic State Representative Sam Babalde of Madison says that discourages inmates from staying in touch with their friends and loved ones.
If people are incarcerated or detained, and cut connection with the outside world, chances are that when they come out, they will go back to prison again.
Balde is sponsoring a plan that would ban county jails from charging rates that are higher than national prepaid wireless plans. He says that will prevent counties and telecommunications companies from profiting on the backs of people who can often afford it the least. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
One of the leaders of the legislature's Rules Committee is demanding that the Wisconsin Election Commission submit draft regulations to his panel governing absentee ballot drop boxes and corrections to absentee ballot information. Republican Senator Steve Noss made the demand Thursday, specifically negating the guidance. Milwaukee City Attorney Tierman Spencer on Thursday filed to run in the open race for mayor, joining an ever more crowded field. The Journal Sentinel reports that the filing with the city's election commission makes him the ninth candidate in the race. He will have little time to gather the minimum 1,500 signatures from Milwaukee residents by January 11th to get on the ballot. Spencer did not immediately respond to a voicemail and text message seeking comment on his decision to run Thursday. Since he took office in April 2020, Spencer has been at the same
conditions. Learn more at TireRack.com. From Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 43 offices, 5 continents.
Cervix call this month. And Biden also made clear that the United States sees a diplomatic path forward. NPR
and allies encroaching on his borders. Biden offered 2 possible paths forward, the official said. One is focused on diplomacy that would lead to some kind of de-escalation. And the other is about deterrence and the serious consequences should Russia decide to take action.
And so what did Russia say about the call?
Yeah, the Kremlin had their own readout of the call, and those can kind of be different than what the White House says. But Russian officials described the call as good and frank, but they also said Putin warned Biden that more economic sanctions would be a huge mistake and that they could lead to a complete rupture of relations. So strong words. But both leaders acknowledge that there are areas where meaningful progress can be made, as well as other areas where agreements may be, frankly, impossible.
We know that Putin requested this call, which
see a path of conflict. It seems clear to me that Putin is not willing to take away the threats until he gets something. And if he doesn't get something, he seems
if Russian lives are lost in the process. He says that could be very damaging politically to Putin.
Okay, so what's next? Where could the talks go from here?
You know, a big part of this call was focused on future dialogue. Top aides for both the United States and Russia plan to meet on January 10th in Geneva, where they will hold security talks. The two sides will get a bit more
victims were left dead, and James Clark thinks he easily could have been a sixth.
He describes the shooter as a very alpha-type male.
I guarantee you if I was in any of those locations at the same time, he would have gone for me as well.
Like close and daughter and a guest, but says he immediately suspected McLeod.
That was one of the first things on my mind. It was him.
The first people killed on Monday were Alicia Cardenas, a tattoo artist who had leased the spot where the gunman's business had failed, and her co-worker, Alyssa Gunmaldonado. Gunmaldonado's husband was wounded. Danny Scoville, a former worker at the failed business, was shot and killed at a tattoo shop in a neighboring suburb. Annie Bagford went there this week to mourn under Colorado's red flag law. That's left tattooist James Clark wondering what everyone could have done differently.
With all these red flags and all these warnings and basically a...
This is NPR News.
It's morning
edition. Apprenticed in Bolesław's great-uncle's shop in Zamość, Poland. When World War II came, he was rounded up by the Nazis and forced to work for the regime. But after the war, he and his wife came to Chicago. He got a job forging parts for train cars for the Chicago Transit Authority. Some of Bolesław's earliest memories of his dad are connected to that work.
I knew he worked with metal, and he smelled... The smells of metal were on his clothes, and I remember those smells. Smell is a very strong sense, and I remember that as a very young boy of three.
Three of his sons on metal sculptures and other art pieces.
This is the blacksmith shop. That's the forge over there.
The coals in the forge heat the ends of the iron red hot until it's malleable. For some tasks, they use a massive power hammer to flatten it. The shop always has multiple projects in the works. In the next room, Bolesław's youngest son, Valerius, is drawing sunflower leaves onto a steel sheet.
We're going to cut it out like this with like a plasma torch. And then I'm going to put it in the forge, and then we're going to shape it, put grooves in it, put it to life. Yep.
Valerius's older brother, August, says they want to use the unique qualities of the metal they work with.
So say, for instance, I'm splitting a bar of metal, right? It's naturally going to swell on the sides, right? I'm going to let that show. Or if I'm drawing out a piece of metal, I'll leave the hammer blows. And the iron just becomes a vehicle to express our ideas through.
Bolesław is deeply connected to his Polish roots. On the afternoon that he was showing me around his shop,
is time transcending, that it'll be around a very long time.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Matheson Memorial Library is holding cross-stitch courses January 13th and 20th from 12 to 1:30. Shelley Wilson teaches how to create simple designs using patterns supplied by Country Living Magazine. Call 262-723-2687.
Pleased to promote family-friendly fun. Find out more at wpr.org/events.
In sports, the Badgers had a 20-13 victory over Arizona State in the Las Vegas Bowl.
Music of musicians we lost.
And today, we start with someone we lost earlier this month. Michael Nesmith of the Monkees would have celebrated his 79th birthday yesterday. The man who laid down the beat for the Rolling Stones, drummer Charlie Watts, died this year. Also, Dusty Hill, the bassist for ZZ Top, and Don Everly, half of the Everly Brothers.
Another drummer died in May, less famous perhaps than Charlie Watts, but Roger Hawkins of the Muscle Shoals rhythm section graced the recordings of Aretha Franklin.
Introduce myself, my name is Humpty, pronounced with the umpty. Grab upper girl and get on the floor and listen to Marky D. Rob the Lord, because the
official amateur is on it all amazing. Analytically, I assault, animate things. Broken barriers bounded by the bomb beat.
Y'all gon' make me lose my mind. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gon' make me go all out.
Keeping it clean, you know you riding on stocks. And we in Rosemead, so yes, I had to bring a box. Stanley's out, you know they had to bring the cops. We going high speed, chases couldn't get me if I'm God, but I'm not.
Just a few weeks ago, at the age of 28, Draco the Ruler was killed. We also heard from DMX, Gift of Gab, from Blackalicious, Prince Marky D of the Fat Boy.
Power three, baby.
We heard there from Meatloaf's producer, Jim Steinman. And also Hall of Fame production work from Phil Spector, whose legacy as a musical force was destroyed when he was convicted of the murder of Lana Clarkson.
Phil Spector is not the only musician on this list with a complicated legacy. James Levine led New York's Metropolitan Opera for 40 years, but left in disgrace after multiple sexual assault allegations.
Brazilian singer Marília Mendonça was just 26 when she died in a plane crash in November. We all
be home, sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top.
Paddy Maloney brought his tin whistle and the folk music of Ireland around the world with the Chieftains. He died in October. And music there from bluegrass legend Sonny Osborne and singer-songwriter Nancy Griffith.
And finally, we could give his own category, fill this entire segment with the music of Stephen Sondheim, who helped create beloved,
informative, engaging, and entertaining programs, thanks to the support of members. Find out more at WPR.org.
24/7 Jazz HD2 is available on your smartphone. For jazz, big band, and blues, go to the App Store and download the free WGTD app. HD2 is still available on your desktop at WGTD.org and in the Kenosha Racine area on your HD radio.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha.